to Gender Forking, a Twilight Saga podcast, where we are talking about Stephenie Meyer's Eclipse, specifically two chapters that Sam is checking on the numbers of right
and
now.
It is 12 and 13.
Yeah, some really interesting chapters.
Per usual.
Per usual. Yeah. This has been a really enjoyable read so far.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's because I don't remember very much.
Yeah. It's terrible, but it's fresh.
It's bad, but it's good. It's fresh. It's stale. It's timeless. It's dated.
Yeah. Extremely mild Twilight news.
Mm-hmm.
Three small pieces of information that I've picked up since we last recorded. One, sure. Robert Pattinson new song on Spotify?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've seen speculation that it is, in fact, not a new song. Because it sounds so fucking weird.
Yeah, like, it sounds exactly like his old stuff.
Yeah, I've seen some speculation that maybe somebody had this and, like, uploaded it under his name. Because the quality of it is so weird.
Interesting. And it's like, he's not promoting it, is he?
Well, he doesn't do anything ever.
That's
so I don't.
So true.
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised, since we haven't really heard anything since, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if it's something that's old and that he actually didn't upload it.
Interesting.
But if you haven't heard, Robert Pattinson has a new song on Spotify that is just precisely what you would expect it to be.
Yeah, think of his old music and then you're like, yeah, that's exactly
that's
what it is.
Second piece of news.
Mm-hmm.
Kristen Stewart ghost hunting show?
What?
Yeah, she's like a part of some new ghost hunting show in some way. Hang on.
Oh my god.
Somebody posted
about
it. I would
have watched
the
fuck out of that.
I know.
I love ghost hunting shows.
Sometimes I just get my Twilight news from our literal Discord.
Oh, I got a new phone and I forgot to log into Discord.
So it's been a while.
It's been a while.
Really excited to announce that I'm teaming up with Scout, the producers of Queer Eye, Legendary, The Hype, on the most gayest, most funnest, most titillating queer ghost hunting show ever. And casting begins. We need to find the most incredible LGBTQ+ ghost hunters, paranormal specialists, mediums, psychics, investigators, who will lead the pack on this super gay ghost hunting adventure. So if you are curious, which is what you should be when starting a new adventure, just check out the website, which is ghost.castingcrane.com for
Kristen,
more information.
Okay.
Oh my god, I hope that they go visit the Lizzie Borden house.
Oh my god.
Because she played Lizzie Borden, yeah. And
if anyone listening loves ghost stuff,
and
please,
gay.
Yeah, and you're gay. Please, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Please sign up for that. Oh my god. Couldn't be me. I don't have the constitution.
No, I would piss it. Myself.
Yeah.
Frankly.
But I will watch it. My other piece of Twilight news is that there's a new show on Netflix called First Kill, and there is a Twilight reference in the theme song.
Whoa.
If you like vampire media, I think you would really appreciate First Kill. It's a queer vampire story set in high school, very like Romeo and Juliet vibes. Mm-hmm. One of the Netflix descriptors on it is soapy, which I would say is accurate.
Mm-hmm. I love soapy.
Yeah, it's really fun.
I don't have any Twilight news.
Okay.
Period. Which means it's time for a drink swap.
Oh, yeah.
I'm delighted to tell you that JJ has chosen and crafted your drink for today.
That's really thrilling. Why don't you have mine first,
mm-hmm.
since it's going to be a lot easier to figure out what it is.
Oh, let's see. I'm getting hints of...
Stop.
Let's see. I'll have a sip first. Would that be blood orange and gin?
It's almost like we had the same drink together just a few days ago.
It's really good, though.
There's also some Aperol in there.
Ah, great work.
Thanks. I didn't measure at all.
This won't be as enjoyable.
Oh, God. I hope you like ice clinking sounds.
Clink, clink, clink.
It smells like coffee.
Mmm.
But I don't think it is. Oh, I'm super scared. Oh, no. Is this a burnt trailer?
Yes, it is!
Oh, no! So that's Moxie and Alan's coffee brandy?
Yes, it is. JJ was so excited to make this, put one shot in, and was like, I really want it to be coffee brandy forward.
Mm-hmm.
And put another shot in,
mm-hmm.
and then put a can of Moxie. And I was like,
so you're going to be drinking this?
No, JJ will be drinking it. I'm actually going to bring it to him right now.
I don't
hate
it. It's
not horrible.
No.
But it's not, I'm not going to drink it.
Bye bye.
I've prepared.
Okay.
A summary, which is a lie. I'm just going to make up a summary.
Yeah, yeah. Chapter 12 time. Want to do both at the same time or just one chapter?
We probably do both.
Yeah.
Especially chapter 12 is pretty short. Alice presents to Bella that the fact that she is going to have a graduation party for Bella.
Mm.
This spirals Bella into a existential crisis about how soon graduation is approaching and how not ready she feels. So she has a really deep conversation with Edward about some things that are weighing on both of them. She picks up the newspaper in the morning. They've picked up the story about the killings, slayings, as they say, in Seattle. There are journalists who are suggesting that it might be a serial killer. Bella and Edward cut school and they go hang out with the Cullens to seek Jasper's guidance. Jasper shares how he came to be a vampire, including all of the Confederate Army vampire wars. Then they kind of come to a more firm hypothesis about what's been going on in Seattle.
Yeah, so now we've arrived at the Jasper chapters, just as we thought that we
might. Just as we thought we might.
Happy Juneteenth, everybody.
Literally. Observed. Yes, yeah, observed. It's the 20th. Shockingly little in here of any recognition at all.
Very different way of developing a lore and storytelling than we got in the last section about the made-up Quileute history.
So chapter 12, time. As Lori said, this chapter is a lot to do with Bella grappling with the fact that she has just realized that graduation is only 1 week away. She's been so busy, so wrapped up in everything that she's got going on with her relationship problems, with the Victoria stuff and the weird threats and the werewolf-vampire beef, that all of a sudden this date has arrived. And of course, she has some very specific feelings attached to the date of graduation because that is the date that she has set and agreed upon with Carlisle that she will be turned into a vampire at some point after graduation.
Yeah, there's not like a firm,
it's not a hard line
date, but that has been the date that she's had in her mind.
Yeah.
She seemed in the past very attached to doing it ASAP.
Like, yeah.
She's been ready like on a moment's notice. She's been like, bite me now.
Yeah.
So like, we are probably to assume that she is, like, hoping to graduate high school and immediately.
Yeah, I definitely get the vibe that she has been assuming that it's going to be immediate.
Yeah.
Like, it'll be after graduation, meeting, like, that day.
Right. Or soon, like, after. Maybe the next week.
Yeah. Which has never really been discussed. Obviously, graduation is more like a finish line to cross rather than a deadline for being turned. However, I know that she's feeling super anxious about needing to be turned into a vampire in order to kind of stake a claim, haha, in her own safety.
Mm-hmm. So she completely dissociates on her way home.
Yeah, she's super freaked out. Again, Alice has let her know that they are throwing... She says, we are throwing a graduation party. It's like...
They never would have done this for any reason other than Bella.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Like, it's for Bella, but, like, they're all throwing it together.
Yeah.
The graduating Cullens. She's so unaware of what day it is that she's like, why couldn't you just wait a couple of weeks to tell me about this party? And they're like, well, the party's next week.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I'm so excited for.
Oh my God,
I love the fact that they have this party.
I don't remember very much of it. I am thrilled. Like, yeah. I'm jazzed.
I'm going to be making the whole playlist.
The 4th of June.
Yes.
I actually spent some time looking at the timeline today.
Oh boy.
Not for any, like, real exciting reason. I'll tell you in a minute what it was. But but I was just, like, reading it really briefly, and I was like, holy fucking shit.
Yeah. It's jarring every single time.
Yeah.
The fact that this series takes place over, like, 2 years is absolutely illegal.
A lot can change in 2 years. I mean, think about...
A lot can change in 2 years.
If you think about June 2020...
Oh, yeah. Don't talk to me about that.
I know. How dare you?
But no, I mean, seriously, like, when you... From the time that you are a junior in high school to the time that you turn, like, 19 years old, a lot changes.
Yes.
Usually not this much.
No, not usually this much.
Not this much.
I really fell into a... This is a tangent, but I really fell into a hole the other day of, like, this one specific, like, mommy influencer on Instagram. One of her reels was, like, recommended to me. And I was like, wow, she looks really young. And also, I thought she looked Catholic. A strange thing to say, but she was.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, how... like, what's going on here? So I, like, went through her entire Instagram. She got pregnant at 17.
The drama.
Quickly married afterward.
Ooh.
And was, like, already, like, relatively, like, famous-ish on Instagram. Not, like, super famous. She's, like, a micro-influencer. But she's very active in Catholic Instagram.
Okay.
So she made, like, a post about how, like, they were rectifying their situation in front of God or whatever. Fascinating. And I was just thinking about, like, the ages and, like, how immature all of the things that she was writing sounded, which, yeah, obviously, like, no shade to anyone who's 17 at all. Mm-hmm. But it's always fascinating to listen to people who are that young talk about things like having children and being married. And I was, like, thinking about it, and I was, like, not a dissimilar timeline between when she met her partner, when they got engaged, when they got married, when they had children, to, like, the Twilight thing. And I was like,
that's how it is for some people, I guess. Like,
yeah, who are, exactly.
Yeah, that, like, yeah, who are, especially who are maybe religious, not to, like, overgeneralize there, but I guess, like, if you are more, maybe more likely to
people have those milestones to, yeah, get married younger.
Yes.
Not only religion, but also, like, people who are affiliated with the military.
Yeah.
Like, things like that. Like, there's a lot of reasons, but
yeah.
Yeah, it was just really reminding me that, like, this is something that, like, for so many people is a normal,
it's how it is,
timeline.
Yeah, like, whether that's now or like, whether it was 10 years ago or 50 years ago, like, that happens.
Yeah.
It's a lot to be dealing with, especially when you are so young. Mm-hmm. Going through, like, important, not important as in, like, everybody needs to have them, but, like, they are usually significant in somebody's life, mm-hmm, those milestones, when your brain isn't even fully developed.
Totally.
I was reading some of my teenage diaries today. So, like, I was like, yeah, I didn't know anything when I was a teenager. So
totally.
Like, I just can't imagine. Yeah. So Bella is struggling with the timing of this. She's kind of realizing that she hasn't really thought practically at all about how she's going to, like, say goodbye to her parents.
Which I think is kind of by, like, design on Edward's part, because he wants to put this off as long as possible, so he hasn't really pushed her to have those thoughts.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
she's been so consumed by other things that she hasn't naturally had them. And, like, he's not saying, like, oh, by the way, Bella, like, TikTok, like, you better get on this,
because, yeah,
like, he doesn't want it to happen.
Yeah. So Edward notices that she's, like, retreated into herself right now. Mm-hmm. So when they get back to her house, he kind of pulls it out of her and sits her down and is like, let's just talk about whatever you're thinking about, please.
Mm-hmm. He gets freaked out because he, like, can't read her mind.
Yeah.
And is like, you have to tell me.
Yeah.
He thought it was about the party.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like, did I really upset you about this party?
Well, it's like, I mean,
which is valid.
Yeah, it's valid because he really upset her by taking her to prom. Mm-hmm.
And, like, the birthday party was upsetting for lots of reasons.
Yeah.
So, like, of course it's not going to, she has reasons to, like, be upset that it wouldn't go well. However, yeah, she has bigger things on her mind.
Bigger fish to fry, if you,
yeah,
will.
They have this conversation about whether or not she's ready. And she's like, well, I am ready. And he's like, you don't seem like you are, mm-hmm, essentially. And he has a really good point because she's freaking, yeah, out about it.
Yeah.
Just because she isn't ready to do it right now doesn't mean that she doesn't want to do it at all.
I think this is a good example of, like, Bella needing a third party to talk to who's not invested yeah, in her making a decision one way or another. Like, there are valid reasons why she doesn't seem ready right now.
Yeah.
That she could probably get some value out of, like, talking about, but, like, Edward has an agenda.
Yeah.
And he's being really good about it.
He is being good. And I think the pressure that she's feeling is not because of this arbitrary deadline that she set, but because, again, of the external pressures that are happening. So yeah, she's like, not only am I not ready to, like, make this leap right now, but, like, I kind of don't really have a choice because of Victoria, because of the Volturi. Edward's like, he has this little paragraph about choice, which I think is really interesting. Mm, he says, yeah, Bella, not one of us had a choice. You've seen what it's done to Rosalie, especially. We've all struggled trying to reconcile ourselves with something we had no control over. I won't let it be that way for you. You will have a choice. Which is, like, news to me.
Right. I know. I was like, Edward, champion of choice?
Yeah.
It's more likely than
anything.
Since
when? Since two days ago.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Since he decided that was his new agenda.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like, this is my brand now.
They kind of, like, relax for a second and talk about something a little less stressful, which is that Alice, in the middle of telling Bella about this graduation party, mentioned that she really loves the gift that Bella's gonna get her, but Bella hasn't gotten it yet.
So stressful.
And so Bella's like, can I ask you something? And Edward's like, anything. And she says, what am I getting Alice for graduation? He is like, it looks like you're getting us both concert tickets. And then she says, that's right, the concert in Tacoma. I saw an ad in the paper. So
she said, I thought it'd be something you'd like because you said it was a good CD. It's like, what is this going to be? Linkin Park? I always think it's Linkin Park.
So actually, I just looked up some concerts in 2006.
Oh my God.
In Tacoma.
Is that what year this is?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's why I looked at the timeline just to confirm that we were in 2006.
Oh God.
So these events are happening in June of 2006, which means the concert must be later. Mm-hmm. The first concert in the concert series in the Tacoma area that I could find is called Sophisticated Ladies.
Oh my God.
There's also Danny, King of the Basement, Celtic Fiddle Festival, Seattle Men's Chorus.
Definitely that.
Gilbert and Sullivan's The Pirates of Penzance. Little Baron in the Enchanted Wood, Turtle Island Quartet, and someone named Joan Baez.
Okay.
So, in my mind, it's one of those.
Yeah.
Because we all know how good Stephanie is about doing research.
Yeah, yeah. I hope it's Turtle Island Quartet.
Me too.
That sounds like an indigenous group.
Right. I mean, who would go to Tacoma?
I don't know.
And not Seattle.
So, hypothetically, they go to the concert, but they're probably not going to because they're probably going to be busy with other things.
Like childbirth?
Yeah. Bella says to Edward, "You don't want me to be a vampire." And she asks him to explain why. I guess this is, like, not something that she knows, which so...
He's on his soul bullshit.
Yeah. So his explanation is that you could do better. I know you don't believe I have a soul, but I'm not entirely convinced on that point. And to risk yours, it would be the most selfish act I can imagine. And, like, giving in to making her a vampire so that he can have her in his life feels selfish to him. Blah, blah, blah. And Bella's like, oh.
Very pleased yeah. with this answer.
So it's not like, because you're not going to like me when I'm different. Mm-hmm. She's worried that so many of the things that he, I think, is vocal about treasuring about her, which is the way that she smells and the way she feels and, like, these kind of, like, physical human characteristics are going to go away.
Yeah.
And he's like, I like those things, but no.
And I think this is really fascinating because this is actually a plot line in the Vampire Diaries after the main character yeah. in the love triangle becomes a vampire. Vampirism in that world does something similar that it does in this world in that it amplifies your existing characteristics. Mm-hmm. Not to the point where you have a power, but like the point where like your dominant personality traits are just like very, mm-hmm. very present. Her partner at the time that she becomes a vampire does not like her after she yeah. becomes a vampire the same way. And she becomes extremely appealing to his brother, which he's always been really like into her, but like very into her.
Gotcha.
And she also becomes very into him after she becomes a vampire, which is really fascinating.
That could happen here with Rosalie. We don't know yet. We haven't read the rest of this book.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally can
it could happen.
And it should.
It should.
I like the implication that you haven't read the rest of the book.
I've never read it before in my life. I like that idea. I think it's interesting that Bella just assumes that, like, truly she won't be any different. So the rest of this book, she'll start to grapple with what it will be like for her to be a newborn. But beyond that, she doesn't really, I don't know, we've never been given any reason to believe that these vampires became noticeably different once they became vampires. The concern that she has is, like, valid. Like, that, mm-hmm. that like, he might find her different after she's changed.
Yeah.
And maybe he likes her because she's a human.
Not really an experience that any of the other vampires have had, so it's not something that they can really confirm. Like,
yeah.
they were together as vampires only, mm-hmm. with, like, the exception of, like, Esme and Carlyle,
yeah.
who knew each other for, like, in a brief period of time when Esme was human, but, like, not to the extent that, like, they were in love or anything like that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of uncharted territory to navigate a relationship during a change like that, but mm-hmm. whatever, they're star-crossed, etc. Well, to a cantante, it'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting, too, because it's, like, there's, like, a very valid question of, like, are they attracted to each other because, or is he attracted to her because of the way she smells? Bella and Edward talk about how he's still going to like her after she's a vampire. He's yeah. like, I like these human things about you, but, like, I'm keeping you specifically. You'll always be my Bella. You'll just be a little more durable.
I love that line.
Yeah. I think it's in the movie.
Yeah. My Bella just less breakable, I think. Mm-hmm. Or oh, okay. less fragile or something like that.
Don't look at you.
Look at me.
So Edward asks her the same thing, which is, will you answer a question for me without sparing my feelings, which is what she asked.
This is so out of pocket.
I know. God.
I'm glad they're having a conversation.
Yeah.
The way he says it.
I know. Well, what she said was, you don't want me to be a vampire. And what Edward says is, you don't want to be my wife.
Accusatory. She said, my heart stopped and then broke into a sprint. A cold sweat dewed on the back of my neck and my hands turned to ice. Poor Bella.
She's like, why do you feel that way? I think her answer is so valid.
It's so good. It's so relatable.
This conversation's really great, actually. Yeah. She says, okay, fine. I'm sure this will sound like some big joke to you, but really, it's just so embarrassing. And she says, I'm not that girl, Edward. I'm not the one who gets married right out of high school like some small town hick.
Offensive.
Who got knocked up by her boyfriend. Do you know what people would think? Do you realize what century this is? People don't just get married at 18. Not smart people. Not responsible, mature people. I wasn't going to be that girl. That's not who I am. And Edward's like, oh, it's not that you were just more eager for immortality itself than for just me. It's like, you're such a piece of shit.
And he, it's like so wild because...
Is that the impression that she's given him in any way?
No, he's an idiot. He's just like got his feelings hurt because he's like, why doesn't my girlfriend want to marry me?
Yeah. I don't think it should be hard for him to understand this.
No.
Like, it's okay that he asked, but like...
This is so real.
This matters, what she's saying.
What she's saying matters. She's a little bit judgmental.
Per usual.
But it's really valid to be concerned about what her peers and family are going to think.
Right.
When she gets married at 18.
Yeah, and like they're talking so much about how to create this cover story for her becoming a vampire. And so like, of course they care about her image. And it's like, to be fair... They could get married and no one has to fucking know about it.
Hugely suspicious if you get married at 18 and then suddenly disappear when you move out of state with your boyfriend, husband, whatever.
Yeah.
That is huge red flags in my eyes.
Yeah.
Like, of all the people that I knew that got married at that age in my, like, close-ish circle, I was, like, watching their social media from a distance like a hawk looking for signs that things were wrong.
Yeah.
And not because I'm a hater, but because I was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Truly, genuinely concerned that they were going to be isolated or, like, something bad was going to happen. And I'll just say, I wasn't wrong.
Yeah. it's a truly a red flag. Something that they don't talk about here or... to my knowledge ever, is like Edward's condition of, if you want me to be the one to change you into a vampire, you have to marry me first.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, why can't you get married after?
Right. There's no reason.
I don't understand that part of it.
He's trying to secure the bag.
I guess so.
He's like, you're not going to leave me after we become vampires, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Because it's like, I feel like she would have a lot less issue with marrying him after when she's already been like removed from her life.
Yeah.
But maybe that's not what he wants.
I think that for him, it's not about the paperwork and the status. It's about...
He's not concerned about taxes?
No. He's concerned about everyone knowing that they belong to each other, which means that they have to have a public wedding, which means that she has to be in the public eye, which means that she can't be a vampire yet. I think that's what's important to him. I think it's about the show of it all.
Yeah. And they don't discuss that at all.
No.
They should.
But what he does say...
Yeah.
is, please. You see, Bella, I was always that boy. In my world, I was already a man.
Okay.
Go off. I wasn't looking for love. No, I was far too eager to be a soldier for that. I thought of nothing but the idealized glory of the war that they were selling prospective draftees then. But if I had found... I was going to say if I had found someone, but that won't do. If I had found you, there isn't a doubt in my mind how I would have proceeded. I was that boy who would have, as soon as I discovered that you were what I was looking for, gotten down on one knee and endeavored to secure your hand. Bella imagines this. And she says, I saw myself in a long skirt and a high-necked lace blouse with my hair piled up on my head. Stephanie Meyer Mormon fantasy when?
Literally.
And then she said, I shook my head and swallowed. I was just having Anne of Green Gables flashbacks.
She says, the thing is, Edward, in my mind, marriage and eternity are not mutually exclusive or mutually inclusive concepts. And since we're living in my world for the moment, maybe we should go with the times, if you know what I mean. Just an interesting non-Mormon thing for her to say.
Yes. And he says, we're leaving time behind you altogether. Why should the transitory customs of one local culture affect the decision so much? And that is really minimizing this.
Yeah.
It's really invalidating and minimizing to be like one local culture. Like, no, that's the dominant culture.
Yeah. Like where we are right now.
Where we are
affecting
right
my life.
Like this is the dominant culture in our countries.
Yes.
Is the dominant culture in a lot of countries. Like
yes. And both of these decisions, her becoming a vampire
and her getting married to him, both of these decisions impact her way more than they impact him.
Yeah.
Like, they should be completely up to her. Mm-hmm. So he shouldn't be holding it over her like this, of course, of course.
Yeah, and they end on it, like, his condition is still in effect, that if he is going to change her, she must marry him first. She hums the wedding march.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I know we are rapidly approaching a proposal, and I don't feel like they're going to come to a true agreement mm-hmm. about this decision before they are engaged.
It's a lot of pressure to propose to someone when you don't know how they feel.
Yeah, and in fact, maybe you shouldn't do that.
Yeah, I would agree. If you feel like someone might not say yes to your proposal, then maybe, like, just don't.
Yeah. Anyway, we move on to the next day. Bella reads the paper. She reads it's a whole like 2.5 page article on the killings happening in Seattle. Stephenie Meyer has gone into detail about the history of serial killings in that area, talking about the Green River Killer.
Which is a real person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She says she's written this pretty detailed fake news article about what's happening, which gives us a lot of information about what has occurred. So we learn that in 3 months, how many is it?
39.
39 people have died in 3 months. It's happening exponentially.
Faster.
Yes.
Than the other serial killer in the area who killed 48 people over 21 years.
Yeah. And this is also happening as time goes on, more and more people are dying. So, like, at first it was, like, mm-hmm. 6 people. And then, like, within 2 weeks it was, like, 11 people. So it's doubling.
The only thing that links these things together, it's not the choice of victims. The targets are not similar in age, gender, race, or any combination of the three. It's not, like, low-profile disappearances. It's not, like, easy targets like runaways or homeless people. Mm-hmm. But the similarity is the modus operandi to rule out unrelated crime. So the similarity is that every single victim discovered has been burned to the extent that dental records were necessary for identification using some sort of accelerant like gasoline or alcohol, but with no traces of any accelerant to be found. And they've all been carelessly dumped with no attempts at concealment, have shown evidence of brutal violence, crushed bones snapped by some tremendous pressure, which medical examiners believe occurred before the time of death. Every crime is perfectly clean of evidence aside from the remains themselves. No fingerprints, tire tread marks, foreign hairs, no sightings of any suspects.
And these are all, spoiler alert, this is the newborn vampire army mm-hmm. in Seattle, and these are all people that they've killed. Mm-hmm. What I think is interesting is that this article doesn't talk about, like, the presumably roughly 20 people that are missing.
Yes.
And haven't been found.
Yeah.
So, like, on top of, like, the 30-something people that have died, like, there's definitely a lot of other people that are missing that haven't been found that, like, I would assume that that would be a part of the same investigation, or maybe they're just not linking it, but why wouldn't they? I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess maybe they're not linking it. I don't know how common it is for people to disappear.
It can't be this common with also this many deaths.
Yeah, you'd think that you'd be grasping for any sort of information that could link anything to anything at this point.
So Bella's super fucking freaked out about this.
And they ditch school to talk about it.
Edward's really like, you need to go to school.
Yeah.
He doesn't care anymore.
And that's so true.
Yeah.
Like, so Bella doesn't get enough mental health days.
Yeah. He says about Alice, she can't see anything. Mm-hmm. Although we've made up our minds half a dozen times to check it out, she's starting to lose confidence. She feels like she's missing too much and that something is wrong. So much so that maybe she feels that her vision is slipping away. He also says that he thinks it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. We keep waiting for Alice to see something so we can go, and she doesn't see anything because we won't really go until she does, so she can't see us there. Mm-hmm. And so maybe they'll have to go in blind without knowing anything.
That is
very alarming to Bella, of course.
He also says, as they're talking about the possibility that her vision is slipping away, he really doubts that that's happening because powers tend to intensify over time. Mm-hmm. Looking at, like, people like Arrow and Jane, who have been around for a really long time and are very, very powerful, which I think has really interesting non-plot related, like, implications for, like, what it might look like in the future for all of these people's gifts to intensify.
Because
they're pretty powerful right now. So for, like, Edward's gift to intensify, I can't imagine what that might look like.
Mm-hmm. So Edward says, I want to talk to Jasper. And Bella says, Jasper again. It was strange. In the Cullen family, Jasper was always a little on the fringe, part of things, but never the center of them. It was my unspoken assumption that he was only there for Alice.
I had the sense that he would follow Alice anywhere, but that this lifestyle was not his first choice. She continues to go on about him. She's reflecting on how she doesn't know much about his history in particular, just that he was in the South before Alice found him. So they go to the Cullens' house.
Everybody's really on edge except for Emmett, who Bella says seems perfectly at ease. Nothing ever bothered Emmett. And it's like, he's one, not bothered, and two, really invigorated by the thought that he might get to fight someone.
He wants to fight.
They're discussing the news. They're watching the news. Carlisle says, I'm concerned. We've never involved ourselves in this kind of thing before. It's not our business. We aren't the Volturi. And Edward's like, well, I don't want the Volturi to come here because that's bad news for them.
This is such parallels to why people don't call the cops.
True.
Or I shouldn't have to call the cops. They should be taking care of things proactively. Mm-hmm. That's not what cops are designed to do.
Mm-hmm. And they don't do it.
And they don't do it. And if I call the cops, me and my family are going to be hurt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just saying.
Edward picks up on something that Jasper is thinking and comments on it out loud. And Bella says, I wasn't the only one who stared at him in confusion, but I might have been the only one who didn't look slightly annoyed. Same. I find it really annoying when he does this.
I know. He's like, interesting, fascinating, thanks. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And everyone else is like, please share with the class. Yeah.
So Jasper starts to talk. For some reason, he like singles out Bella and looks at her and he says, you're confused. No shit.
Yeah.
Of course she's
confused.
And
Emmett's like, we're all confused.
Yeah. Come on, bestie. He says, you can afford the time to be patient. Bella should understand this too. She's one of us now. And Bella says, his words took me by surprise. As little as I'd had to do with Jasper, especially since my last birthday when he tried to kill me, I hadn't realized that he thought of me that way. Neither did I.
No. I think it's Alice's, like, insistence that she's one of them that is really getting to him. I don't know.
So he's like, okay, I'm going to tell you my story.
The theatrics of it all.
I know.
He starts rolling up the arms of his sweater.
Here we go again. And she notices that his arm is completely covered with raised crescent marks, very much like the one that she has on her hand that she got from James, the bite mark. So essentially she realizes that he is fully fucking covered in vampire bite marks, which is actually really horrifying.
Horrifying. Really, really creepy. Really eerie. Very,
yeah.
And she says what every good trauma-informed person says, which is, Jasper, what happened to you?
So that's the end of the chapter. He's about to dive into his whole backstory.
His whole shit.
His whole ass shit. So let's take a little break.
Yeah.
Before we dive into that.
Let's look at the weather. It's cloudy, and it's going to be cloudy for like 4 days.
I love it when it's cloudy.
It's like 61, not like any rain really in the forecast, so it's pretty dry, but pretty humid. I have a piece of news.
Okay.
Which is, the Quileute tribe would like to remind the public that it is a trespassing violation to visit any of their islands, that they are sacred to the village of Lapush and to the Quileute culture, and that trespassing signs are posted, which they posted on their Instagram account a few days ago. I mean, to me, that just suggests that people are not respecting those trespassing signs.
Definitely.
I wouldn't want to assume that it's people who are there for twilight tourism, but I also...
Like, who else goes
would
there?
Assume that it is people who are there for twilight tourism, and please start acting right. We have absolutely no...
We have no right to be there.
We have no right to be there at all. And the fact that we're allowed on that reservation at all is a gift that has been given to us. And please act right. So frustrating.
Some more news in the Forks area is that Olympic National Park has selected a new superintendent. I didn't realize that that was like a title that parks used. Her name is Sula Jacobs. And she says... She looks forward to working with the tribal nations, local communities, and partner groups on how the National Park Service can preserve the diverse resources of the park and create the next generation of stewards and supporters.
Hope she means it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really it. It's just an article about who she is.
Love it. Did you have something that you wanted to tell me about Stephanie Meyer?
Oh, I do. I forgot about that.
Can't wait to find out.
Stephanie Meyer dislikes... when the media constantly mentions her religion, claiming that the press does not emphasize the religions of other authors.
All right. Am I the press?
This is about me.
Is this fucking play about us? I think if someone...
Well, this is...
Here's the thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
C.S. Lewis. Is the person that immediately jumps into my mind. I think if you write with such obvious influence from your niche subculture religion, people are going to ask questions about it, think about it, and talk about it a lot.
Yeah, yeah. That came after a little quote about how she recognizes that her Mormonism influences her writing, particularly, she says, her characters tend to think more about where they came from and where they're going than might be typical, which I think is, like, an interesting thing for her to say, is, like, the thing that is most Mormon about her characters and stories, because it's definitely not.
Yeah. I think that what makes it more interesting to talk about Stephanie Meyer's religion is that Mormonism is still kind of new and shiny and also has a lot bigger departures from other forms of Christianity than most other forms of Christianity. I think it's very, like, everything I see Tom Cruise do, I view in the lens of Scientology.
Yeah. And if the press isn't emphasizing the religion of other authors, it's probably because their religion isn't playing quite so significant a role.
When, like, the His Dark Materials books came out, mm-hmm. those were also, like, really, really, like, contested for different religious groups, Catholicism being one of them. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, people have read into a lot of, like, the overt Christianity present there. It's not like other books aren't being examined through a lens of the author's religion or lack thereof. Mm-hmm. I just think that it was more popular for, like, the lack thereof to be examined at this time.
Mm.
Because, like, you were coming out of, like, the Bush era.
Yeah, yeah.
I just remember, like, growing up religious, the question was always, am I going to be allowed to read this book? Mm. Are my friends going to be allowed to read yeah. this book? It's not like she's the only person whose book is being talked about in, like, the framing of religion. It's just that she happens to be highly religious.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that you relate or not to this particular statement?
I feel like if I wrote a book and someone was like, it's really Catholic of you, I would think it was funny.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's funny at this point, mm-hmm. because I'm sure that there would be things that would jump through, you mm-hmm. know? I might be frustrated if somebody brought it up a lot, but for a different reason, not because I'm still highly Catholic.
Mm-hmm. I think it would depend on the way that it's being brought up.
Yeah.
For me. Mm-hmm. I'm not religious. I'm not religious. Unless you count going to a Unitarian Universalist church for several years growing up. If I wrote a book and someone was like, it's really giving Unitarian Universalist vibes, I'd be like, cool, thanks.
Thanks. Yeah, a huge compliment, actually. Yeah. That's what I strive for.
Yeah. Before I move on to the next chapter, we got a question comment from 2 episodes ago. This is from somebody who is on our Patreon. King's Gambit mm-hmm. is their username. They say that they were listening to 2 episodes ago. They were surprised by how much time we spent speculating about Jacob's defense of Quill's imprinting.
Oh, yes. I read this.
You read this? Okay. This person says, it's funny because I always related to this and I didn't give it a second thought. In minority communities, if you don't agree with a tradition or aspect of your culture, you'll still defend it to outsiders, particularly if it's like white folks criticizing it. They figured it might be a similar thing with Jake, where he might be weirded out by a Quill imprinting on a baby, but still don't want that to be criticized by an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
They say, maybe I'm giving Stephanie Meyer too much credit with this analysis. I appreciated this comment because I think that that's, like, a really good reading of what is happening, and I think that Jacob does do that with Bella. Like, he does yeah. get really, really defensive.
I think that's why it's confusing to Bella yeah. when Jacob reacts in that way, because she's like, you don't actually think this, right? And he is kind of at odds with
yeah.
wanting to defend his world. To
yeah.
her.
The only thing that I would add on to this is, of course, like, I don't think that's not how Stephanie Meyer
no,
intended
she's
it, for
not
sure.
thinking about that.
I just take issue with her, with the thing that he needs to defend to Bella is Quill imprinting on a baby. Like,
yeah.
it's like a little bit different than yeah, like totally, a food totally, or totally. Like a tradition or something like that. And it's also like not necessarily a tradition. It's something that is a new phenomenon to them that they are dealing with for the first time. Imprinting becoming something that's like normal, especially on children. So I wouldn't say that it's like part of their culture. However, it's happening specifically in their culture. So maybe he would feel defensive about that. And I think totally. That's understandable. But I don't like that Stephanie Meyer has put him in the position to defend that.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's great.
Right. It's a bar.
Yeah.
But I thought that was a very insightful read of that.
Yeah, for sure. I really appreciate reaction. That comment. Thank you yeah. for writing in.
Chapter 13, Newborn.
Mm-hmm. So, Jasper's backstory. Mm-hmm. Famously, Confederate soldier Jasper. In case you've made it this far and you don't know. Or you forgot yeah. that information. Confederate soldier Jasper.
I just want to get right out the gate and say it is so glossed over.
Extremely.
There's no attempt to talk about it. It is yeah. mentioned, stated as a fact, Jasper does not try to at all rationalize why he made this decision. Yeah, no one questions it. Bella makes no mention of it. It's a fascinating way to introduce it to the story and then never touch it again.
Truly. Again, total 180 from the last section in terms of the way that she chose to tell that story.
Yeah.
The purpose of the story is less to learn about Jasper and more to learn about newborns and the plot.
Yeah.
Right? It's like not really about him.
It provides wider context for what vampires are like around the country in a place that's not Forks.
Yeah. Small piece of information. Jasper has all these scars. They were obtained... What was that?
Battle scars.
They were obtained after he became a vampire. So, and he lets us know that vampire venom is the only thing that will leave a scar on somebody who's already a vampire, which is interesting. He says, "You must understand that there are places in our world, Bella, where the lifespan of the never-aging is measured in weeks and not in centuries. To really understand why, you have to look at the world from a different perspective. You have to imagine the way it looks to the powerful, the greedy, the perpetually thirsty." There's a lot about, like, vampire morals and ethics and, like, power in this section. But it's being framed in a very, like, honestly, just kind of like a good versus evil way.
Yeah.
Not gonna lie. And I was really struck by, and Bella is as well, Jasper's near reverence of the Volturi for their role in essentially policing newborn vampire army wars that have taken place across the world as a way of protecting other people.
It feels like he sees the order that the Volturi have created in eliminating the larger scale vampire newborn wars that we are about to learn about.
Yeah.
As like, if we didn't have them, inevitably we would have this. And I've lived this and I know that this is so much worse. He doesn't really stop to think like, there's another way. Like, he's seeing this as, like, either the Volturi are present and it keeps people in check, or the Volturi are not there. And it's, like, what
and
I went through.
And this happens. Yeah. Yeah. He posits, like, the reason these, essentially, turf wars happen is for control over feeding
and populated areas. Yeah. So people are fighting over major cities.
Yeah.
Where a lot of, or, like, urban centers, population centers where a lot of people are concentrated so that they can feed often without notice.
He says, "If not for the Volturi, the rest of us would quickly be exposed." Bella says, "I frowned at the way he pronounced the name with respect, almost gratitude. The idea of the Volturi as the good guys in any sense was hard to accept." And of course, I agree. And of course, Bella thinks that because she's terrified of them. So this is actually kind of an interesting perspective because it's the only perspective we've ever gotten as like the Volturi like actually doing something and like being useful to the vampire community in some way, which... obviously, we're still skeptical about, you know, they have their own reasons for doing so that are not necessarily for the bettering of all vampires or even for the good of the people that are, like, being slaughtered at disproportionately high and unsustainable rates.
We learn about a man, a vampire, named Benito from north of Dallas.
Yeah.
He is trying to take control of different areas in Texas and Mexico. He massacres covens by using a newborn vampire army. And he's like the person that invented the newborn vampire army. He created all these young vampires that are wild, volatile, and almost impossible to control. And then they turn on each other just as easily as they turn on the enemy. So he's having to keep making more. They're not impossible to beat. Other people are just making newborn armies to fight against this newborn army, basically.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting the way that Jasper describes newborns here. I mean, he's describing them accurately, that they're very physically powerful, but he also says they are slaves to their instincts.
Yeah.
Like, you want to talk about slavery, Jasper?
Right.
Want to talk about it?
Right. We haven't even gotten to his, like, backstory or whatever, and I'm like, how dare you? It's very... it's giving imperialism also.
Yeah.
Like the way that people like are taking over different areas.
From the human perspective, like lots and lots of people are dying. Epidemic proportions of people are dying so much so that like human history blames disease and pandemics for this amount of people dying.
The Volturi intervene, start with Benito, and then anyone found with newborns is executed immediately, and Mexico is emptied of vampires for a time. Jasper says this is kind of a touch point in their history that will always be remembered, even though there are very few witnesses left. Jasper mentions here something that's really significant. significant, which is that the Volturi, essentially their intervention prevented this style of warfare from leaving this geographic region. So it was really centralized to the American South and Central America. Mm. He says that we owe the Volturi for our present way of life.
It's interesting how he juxtaposes the North and the South.
Yeah. And he's very like, it's so interesting because it's like, we are about to learn that he literally, as a human, fights for the South, mm-hmm. but he also, he is talking about this way of life as if it's, like, barbaric and, yeah. like, simplistic and, like, very, like...
monstrous, animalistic, yeah. savage.
And, yeah. like, that Northern vampires were spared that way of life and that maybe there's something inherently less violent about that. And it's, mm-hmm. like... racism in yeah. my Twilight book.
He's still narrating this in like a very individualistic way,
mm-hmm. yeah.
without talking about his own role within that.
So this doesn't end Newborn Wars. Mm-hmm. He's kind of like looking down on the fight, even though he's actively participating in it.
Mm-hmm. And playing a huge, significant role
yeah.
In that we can get into.
He views himself as an outsider who was, like, kind of brought in even almost, like, as a mercenary.
Yeah.
Even though he's such an active participant in it, he's like, this is someone else's fight. I wasn't invested in this going well.
Yeah.
I was, like, there by happenstance, which feels kind of like a trauma response to, like,
yeah.
distance yourself from the amount of harm that you've caused.
He definitely...
But he doesn't ever acknowledge that.
No, and he definitely frames it as, I didn't know there was another way.
Mm-hmm.
He's describing the background, like, the context of yeah. what was happening at the time that he was turned, and he says, when I was human, I lived in Houston. I was almost 17 years old when I joined the Confederate Army in 1861. I lied to the recruiters and told them I was 20. I was tall enough to get away with it. Just couldn't wait to join the Confederate Army. Had to lie about my age so that I can join. Excuse me? Like, he didn't have to be. He's young enough that he wouldn't have to be a soldier. It's kind of hard to say how long he was a human soldier.
Oh my god.
What?
This might be a coincidence.
Okay.
But Benito Juarez was the president of Mexico from 1858... to 1872.
Hmm.
And hello. Was the first indigenous president of Mexico. And it just feels like an awful coincidence
yeah.
that Stephenie Meyer would choose that name.
Wow.
He captured Mexico City in 1861.
I'm gonna go on the wiki for this character.
Hold on a second. Yeah.
According to the Twilight Saga wiki, they have him dying in the 1830s.
Okay.
So before Jasper was even born.
Yeah.
Which would make sense because the context he's giving is this, all this stuff was already happening when he was turned. So he...
That makes more sense. I was yeah. just like...
Huh. However, that's a really strange coincidence.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry for the interruption.
No, that's super interesting. Jasper joins the army, the Confederate army at 17 and... because he lies about his age.
Immediately, by the way. Like, Texas had just seceded in 1861, early 1861. Mm. That's when all the states, the southern states,
so eager.
Started seceding in, like, January, February, March 1861. Texas was admitted into the Confederacy in, like, March 1861. So he was eager to be a
yeah.
part of this.
And he's, you know, I thought that he was a little bit on the older side. Like, I didn't think he was turned when he was 17. According to his wiki, he's turned when he's 19, which sounds a lot more accurate. Mm. So he says here, my military career was short-lived, but it's like, okay, well, it was 2 years long. So
right. yeah.
that's not an insignificant amount of time. It's not like he was there for a month.
This hopefully would go without saying for, like, anyone listening to this podcast, but, like,
yeah.
there's no way that Jasper got engaged in this war without knowing about the implications, like the racial implications.
Right.
Because also in 1861, people were very famously, very loudly, Confederates.
Yeah.
People in the Confederacy were very famously loudly saying things about slavery as being the foundation of the Confederacy. March of 1861, the vice president of the Confederacy, Alexander Stephens, gave the cornerstone speech in Georgia, in which, among other things, he declares that slavery is the natural condition of Black people and the foundation of the Confederacy. So he enlisted in this army
yeah.
with that knowledge.
Sure. And we don't get any other backstory as to who he was before. Who were his parents? What kind of life did he live before he was a soldier? Like, did he have slaves?
We don't know.
It's definitely possible.
We know his father exists.
If we were to give him the benefit of the doubt, it would just to be like, well, maybe he needed to join the army for money.
Yeah.
And it's like,
it wasn't.
Sure, maybe there's circumstances.
Sure. But you even get more information about why Edward is hoping to join the army.
Yeah.
To join the military, rather. Like,
yeah, Edward, like, acknowledged, like, propaganda.
Yeah, he's like, I was sold this image of this war.
Yeah.
And I was wrapped up in that as a young boy who wanted to do something glorious.
Yeah.
And we get absolutely zero hint of why Jasper joined, other than he wanted to.
Yeah.
Like, he was anxious to.
One of the only descriptions we get of what he's actually doing as a human in the Confederate Army is evacuating women and children. Like, we don't get, like,
such a cop-out.
Yeah, I know. It, like, there's nothing else as to, like, what he might have been doing, who he might have been fighting
we
or
do
killing.
We do know that he was in the First Battle of Galveston. I just want to say that I don't have great Civil War history because I was taught the Civil War by someone who called it the War of Northern Aggression because I grew up in the South.
Yeah.
And I've also been to the Museum of the Confederacy, which is a crazy place to go.
Oh.
But he was the youngest major in Texas, and he was quickly promoted through the ranks even over older, more experienced men.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that he is actively doing something. But it probably involves killing people.
Well, it also is, I think, supposed to have to do with this special quality that he has.
Of leadership.
Well, he says, people always liked me. Listened to what I had to say. My father said it was charisma. Of course, now I know it was probably something more. So he's a very charismatic, influential person. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting thinking about Jasper's power because it's a fucking terrifying power.
It's a terrifying power. And also imagine the other things that could be done with this power.
Exactly.
Other than fighting for the fucking Confederacy.
I know. It's like, it's not like his power just does one thing. Like, he can do so many different things with his ability. You could frame that as coming from so many different places. Like, yes, it makes sense that, okay, he's charismatic, he can influence and literally manipulate people.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it could also be coming from a place of, oh, he's super, he's an empath.
Yeah.
You know, because in a way he is, because he can feel people's emotions.
Imagine if he just became a therapist.
I know, right? You didn't have to be this way. He's in Texas. He's evacuating women and children when the Union's attacking. Oh, the fucking Union. Fuck those guys, am I right? Not that the Civil War was entirely about freeing slaves, because obviously there was, like, other things going on.
Right.
It wasn't just, like, everyone in the North was like, slavery's wrong.
Right, they were like, they thought, we're doing this for states' rights.
Yeah, it's not like it was a social justice rampage to end slavery.
No, that was a strategic choice.
Yeah. He is a soldier. He's 19 years old by the time this happens, apparently, where he meets Maria, a vampire, and two other vampires. He has a very interesting description of them.
Rolling my eyes so hard.
So hard! He said they had such pale skin. I remember marveling at it. Even the little black-haired girl, whose features were clearly Mexican, was porcelain in the moonlight.
What the fuck does that mean?
I mean, she's Mexican, but also she's white.
Yeah,
we're just glorifying the whiteness,
like,
of that.
He's like, oh, she's so white, but also she's obviously Mexican.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's one of those examples of, like, if you heard someone say this in person, you could absolutely destroy them by saying, what do you mean by that?
Yeah.
And it's like, nothing good comes out of the way that's phrased.
No. So he meets these three sexy vampires.
This is really giving Dracula, by the way, for anyone who's read the parts of Dracula that have the Dracula's
women in it,
roommate wives.
Yeah.
In it, like, the three of them approaching this, like, young, clueless man.
And he's very clueless. He, like, just kind of doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Just stays there.
And there's no Dracula to save him, so he gets turned.
So Maria changes him. They can tell that there's something different about him, that he's compelling in some way. She says, what is your name, soldier? And he says, Major Jasper Whitlock, ma'am.
That is one of the first times that I remember crying laughing watching a Twilight movie.
Yeah.
Was with my friends Amanda and Alexis, sobbing for
it's
like
so
minutes.
Yeah.
Laughing about the way that he said that.
Yeah. He reveals a Southern accent for the very first time
it jumps
in
out.
The film.
And my mom came into the room and was like, what are you laughing about? And we played it for her and she was like, I don't get it, but okay, have fun.
It's so absurd. And he kind of just accepts his new position in life. I mean, it doesn't seem like he would have much of a choice.
Yeah.
But it's very much like Maria is in charge of him mm-hmm. as a newborn. Mm-hmm. And she's like, this is how we live.
What he's not sharing here is what we mentioned a few minutes ago, which is like, how did he feel about the prospect that he was never going to see his family again? Obviously, yeah, he has a really excellent cover story. Like, it's not like his family's going to be shocked that he died when he was in one of the bloodiest, like, one of the bloodiest
yeah, you can just disappear.
Conflicts in yeah. American history. But, like, it's not like he was expecting to die, like, any minute now. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's no concept of him mourning humanity. It's just, like, him adjusting to joining a new war.
He's referencing the first battle of Galveston. That's the one that we're talking about, right? There wasn't another one. That's, like, the one that's related to Juneteenth?
No. The first Battle of Galveston is in 1863.
Okay.
Juneteenth was 1865, also in Galveston. Mm-hmm. The Emancipation Proclamation was preliminarily announced in 1862, and then it was finally announced on January 1st, 1863, declaring that all enslaved peoples in the Confederate States of America in rebellion and not in Union hands were freed. Despite all of that, it took until June 19th, 1865, for Union Major General Gordon Granger to arrive to Galveston and take command of the federal troops that were landed in Texas mm-hmm. to enforce emancipation in that area of Texas. So it's not a celebration of the day that slavery was abolished. Right. It's a celebration of it took 2 years mm-hmm. for that news to reach Galveston, which was one of the later holdouts.
Gotcha. Okay, so this initial thing that he's talking about isn't that. We're still two years prior to that. He's turned into a vampire. He just switches one war for another, really.
Yes, exactly. So he was turned into a vampire after the Battle of Galveston in 1863, which was a Confederate victory. It was a naval victory.
Mm, interesting.
It was really a time.
Yeah.
Galveston was a very important place during the Civil War because it was a booming center of the economy in Texas. It was one of, and even post, like, during Reconstruction and, like, post Civil War, it was a center of commerce because it's a port city along the Gulf of Mexico. So there's a lot of trade with, like, New Orleans and other port cities.
Okay.
And it also had a lot of the firsts of many things in Texas. So, like, the first synagogue, the first XYZ, whatever. This was a very, like, big spot to be.
Interesting.
It was very, like, strategically important for the Confederacy. So it was a big deal that when the Union were first defeated there and then regained Galveston. Galveston was also, like, booming before the Civil War. Despite thriving, they overwhelmingly voted to join the Confederacy because they believed that the backbone of their economy was slave labor, so that they felt as if they would be unable to sustain their economy without slavery, even though several, like, there was a larger population of free Black people in Texas and other, like, immigrants, like German immigrants, like other immigrants that opposed slavery. But when it came time to vote on secession, Galveston and Texas all overwhelmingly voted to secede because of the implications that they thought that losing slave labor would have on their economy.
I'm thinking about Jasper trading his one war for the next, and I'm reminded that he, very much like Emmett, just wants to fight.
Yeah.
Doesn't really care why. I think he's just kind of down to fight.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not in the same exact way as Emmett. In his own narration of this, he doesn't really talk about, like, the way that he felt about what he was fighting for in either setting.
No.
And both are extremely questionable, so he's basically just saying he just tacitly joined these really bloody fights without questioning them
and
at
I
all.
Think there's something to say for how common that likely was and is.
Yeah.
In how people get involved in the military. It's possible that, like, Jasper just feels so detached from his human life that he doesn't really maybe remember how his feelings or thoughts on how things were going, like, politics and like, social issues were back then, to, like, really even mention what it meant for him to be joining the Confederacy.
Yeah.
But that feels like a huge cop-out because
yeah.
we get that from Edward, and we get other people's thoughts and feelings leading up to their, like, change, and we don't get that here. And it reads as, like, he's just this, like, machine, which is very at odds with, like, his empathetic and charismatic nature.
It's so confusing.
Like, he, one, it feels these things so deeply, and it's really painful for him to take human lives or whatever, but two, also feels this calling to be violent and do war. We're not that far removed from the Civil War. We're really not that far removed from it that, like, people in the South today have feelings like that.
Yeah.
That are rooted in their personal family histories.
Exactly.
And furthermore, Black people have lasting implications of being enslaved. Jasper continued to live in this world. Like, it seems like he took, like, a 10, maybe, year gap of just living in this vampire world where they were doing turf wars, and he was checked out from the, like, period after the Civil War entirely. But, like, he then continued to live in the United States for the entirety of the next X number of years.
Yeah, and the little bit that we do get that we can explore about him saying that it took a toll on him to kill people, it's, like, it's all about the impact that it's having on him. It wouldn't have been that hard to just make him fight for the Union instead.
Right. It, like, even for him to be like, I thought it was really weird that people were fighting for the Confederacy, so I enlisted four states away.
Yeah.
And I fought for the Union.
Or he could just be from a different place.
Yeah.
If he needed to be in Texas, then he could have been fighting for the Union in Texas. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Goodbye.
Really. Choices were made.
Choices were made.
And never explained.
Exactly. That's the story of this saga, though. So Maria's two companions' names are Nettie and Lucy. They hadn't been together long. Maria had rounded up the other two, and all three were survivors of recently lost battles, like different vampire turf wars. They were putting together an army and going about it more carefully than was usual. It was Maria's idea. She wanted a superior army, so she sought out specific humans who had potential and then gave them much more attention and training than anyone else had ever bothered with. So she taught them to fight. She said he was rewarded. He keeps talking about being rewarded, but he never talks about what that means.
What does a vampire want or need? Like, is she restricting the amount that they can feed? In that case, like, maybe he's getting food rewards. Like, yeah.
Maria was a good judge of character. She decided to put me in charge of the others, as if I were being promoted. It suited my nature, exactly. The casualties went down dramatically, and our numbers swelled to hover around 20. My ability, as yet defined, to control the emotional atmosphere around me was vitally effective. We soon began to work together in a way that newborn vampires had never cooperated before. So it's really, truly because of his ability that Maria's army is allowed to thrive.
Because it's like, it's essentially eliminating the infighting that was such a problem, starting with the first newborn army.
He can control the newborns. He says, Maria grew quite fond of me and began to depend upon me, and in some ways I worshipped the ground she walked on. I had no idea any other life was possible. Maria told us this is the way things were, and we believed. Pretty culty.
Very culty.
Also, it's, like, implied that, like, there's some sort of, like, romantic relationship between them, even though it's not really named at all.
Yeah, and there's also... But they're not mates. Like, yeah, there's also some implication that, like, this is... That he's being taken advantage of.
Yeah.
Which is also never explicitly said, and he doesn't seem to be... Like, he's uncomfortable with everything, and he doesn't like the way he's living at the end of this.
Yeah.
But he doesn't seem angry at her. He doesn't seem to think of himself as a victim of these things.
Yeah, he wasn't like, he's not saying like, Maria made me do these things.
Yeah, he even had if agency that's, in it.
Yeah, it's hard to say kind of like...
Kind of. He thinks he had agency
in it. Yeah, it's really hard to say. And I don't really want to try to say that it was either way.
I think all he knew how to do was fight. So it's natural that he would only think that he would just have to stay with her and fight forever. Mm-hmm.
He says of the original 23, he was the only one to survive the first 18 months. And eventually, like, even Nettie and Lucy turn on her. And so it kind of becomes like Maria and Jasper are, like, in charge.
Yeah, they're the only two that are, like, gonna be constant. And everyone else will kind of cycle through. And she's got really big ambitions. She's not just stopping at regaining the territory that she was, like, originally trying to go for. She's captured all of Texas and most of northern Mexico.
Yeah.
So she's really, like, got an eye for expansion. Which, during this time period, it's like, I mean, I know she's supposed to be, like, Mexican, so it's, like, I guess supposed to not be problematic. But it's, like, imperialism? Question mark? Like,
yeah.
During the time when so much, there was so much imperialism happening, and so many conflicts over, like, settling in different places, for that to be happening in a parallel sense here is kind of wild. And then also, like, it begs the question, is this the only place in the world where this was happening? Like, is this like vampire newborn army thing unique to...
I mean, he kind of posits it that way.
He does, at least in this hemisphere.
Yeah.
But, like,
to his knowledge.
we don't know, like, we don't know what else is going on.
Right, right.
It's kind of weird.
Well, I mean, it's all about the way that it's framed, too. Like, this is something that the Volturi address as an issue, but it's, like, it's not okay when other people do it, but it's okay when the Volturi do it.
Right.
Because the Volturi have the say in power. He describes the newborns that he has as meaning little to him and Maria. Like, they're pawns, they're disposable, they do dispose of them as they outgrow their usefulness. When they reach about the 1 year mark, they're not as strong anymore, so they just kill them. He says, my life continued in the same violent pattern, and the years passed. I was sick of it all for a very long time before anything changed. Decades later, I developed a friendship with a newborn. Decades. Who remained useful and survived his first 3 years against the odds. His name was Peter. He was civilized. I suppose that's the right word. He didn't enjoy the fight, though he was good at it. Interesting word. Essentially, Jasper describes a situation where he and Peter are tasked with killing a bunch of their newborns that they're not going to use anymore. And Peter becomes very upset, particularly that they have to kill a newborn named Charlotte. Peter and Charlotte run away together. And then, 5 years later, Peter comes back and tells him about him and Charlotte's life, essentially that there is another way to live. They don't have to, like, be embroiled in the fight. And that, like, in the North, they can just kind of do their own thing outside of the wars that are happening.
The Twilight Wiki estimates that this is about 1938 when Charlotte is turned. That's 60 years of being in this cycle.
It kind of plants the seed with Jasper. He's thinking about getting out. He says, Maria's, like, even suspicious that something's wrong. He says, I was preparing myself to destroy my only ally, the core of my existence. But he also says at some point that, like, his relationship that he has with Maria is, like, not actually very strong, despite how long they've been together.
He says that he walks away without a backward glance, amazed that she let him, because he seems to be such an asset to her that, like, uniquely sets her apart from the people that she's continuously still trying to fight. And I feel like that's probably for simplicity, because this is already a quite a long story. But I think there's some real potential to develop this a little bit more in that, like, I think it's unlikely that she would let him walk away that easily. And I think even in another book, it's kind of mentioned that Maria's kind of nearby or something like that.
Yeah.
Am I remembering that?
I don't know. I don't remember,
like,
that.
In Midnight Sun or something.
We don't know if Maria's still alive. He travels with Peter and Charlotte for a few years. Kind of gets like more of a nomadic lifestyle experience. But he's still not happy. He says he's really depressed. And Peter notices that it's always worse after he hunts. And he says, in so many years of slaughter and carnage, I'd lost nearly all of my humanity. Yet each time I found another human victim, I would feel a faint prick of remembrance for that other life. Watching their eyes widen in wonder at my beauty, I could see Maria and the others in my head. It was stronger for me than it was for anyone else, because I could feel everything my prey was feeling, and I lived their emotions as I killed them. And then he says to Bella, you've experienced the way I can manipulate the emotions around myself, but I wonder if you realize how the feelings in a room affect me. I live every day in a climate of emotion. For the first century of my life, I lived in a world of bloodthirsty vengeance. Hate was my constant companion. It eased some when I left Maria, but I still had to feel the horror and fear of my prey. And it began to be too much.
In Midnight Sun, Edward mentions that Maria once sought the Cullens out when they were in Calgary, which prompted them to move again. And then Jasper politely asked her to keep her distance in the future. And so her presence in Calgary forces them to abruptly relocate. And Jasper also asks Peter and Charlotte, when they visit, to tell Maria that he wishes her well if they meet again.
Interesting. He's trying to stay on her good side.
Yeah, I think he does dangerous. Have a little bit of concern about, like, what his use to her could be, in the same way that, like, there's concern about what Alice and Edward's use could be to the Volturi.
Totally, yeah.
You've kind of got this, like, para power. Like, you've got, like, the formal power, and then you've got this, like, also very powerful person
who
also could ruin a lot of things for the Cullens.
So he's dissatisfied with his life with Peter and Charlotte as well, and ends up leaving them. And he doesn't want to continue killing, but has to in order to survive. He hasn't thought of the animal thing on his own. Mm-hmm. He's not like Carlyle. And then he says when he's in Philadelphia, he was out and about, ducks into a diner, and Alice is waiting for him there. As we learn from her, she has a vision of Jasper when she's first turned, which would have been over a decade ago, and she's been waiting to encounter him ever since. And so they have this sort of, like, karmic cosmic meeting.
They stay together and she tells him about the Collins, about their way of life. He's, I think, really relieved that that kind of existence is possible, that he doesn't have to kill people anymore. So mm-hmm. they go to find, and I love this paragraph. I actually remember this paragraph.
Yeah.
Which is, Edward says, they scared the hell out of us, essentially. Emma and I were away hunting. Jasper shows up, covered in battle scars, towing this little freak, who greets them all by name, knows everything about them, and wants to know which room she can move into. When I got home, all of my things were in the garage.
And Alice says, your room had the best view. And Bella says, that's a nice story.
Yeah.
And it's like, everyone looks at her like, you're fucking nuts. She says, I meant the last part, the happy ending with Alice.
I think that got that moment got explored more in Midnight Sun, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bella doesn't comment at all on the more grisly and traumatic parts of Jasper's
no,
story.
No, and then the they immediately segue. They yeah. immediately segue into talking about this army because yeah. that's what Jasper thinks is happening. Jasper's doubting himself because he thinks, I must be interpreting the signs correctly because there's no motive. Like, there's no history there. There's no vendetta. Like, it doesn't
like,
make
why
sense
would there
as
be
a
one?
Conquest.
Yeah.
Like, there's just nomads. There's no one to defend it from. Yeah. Edward says, does it occur to anyone else that the only possible threat in the area that would call for the creation of the army is us?
Dun, dun, dun. He is also starting to notice that, like, this could be being done by somebody who is aware of Alice's vision and yeah. her powers. Someone who's intentionally hiding, playing with the holes in her vision. It's like, yes, this person is hiding. Maybe that should give you a clue that it's Victoria, who's very good at hiding.
Yeah, but they immediately think it's a Volturi, like, mercenary, basically.
I can't believe they don't know that it's Victoria yet.
It's like,
so kind of
stupid.
It's like,
you're so stupid.
I know it's a YA novel, guys, but, like,
I know. It's like, on. You've got two options. It's the Volturi or Victoria, and you're yeah. really going to be like, it must be the Volturi. There's yeah. no other way.
Edward even cites this desire that he got from Arrow to have Alice and Edward at his side. And maybe the Volturi created this army to root out the competition of the Cullens, since the Cullens are such a strong and large unit. Jasper and Carlyle don't think that this is what's happening because the Volturi don't break rules. And it's like, of course they do.
Yeah.
They make the rules.
They think that it's a little too law and order, like that the Volturi are a little too law yeah. and order for this. But yeah. like, meh.
Yeah. Like, I do think that it's a valid option. They don't understand why the Volturi are not involved already.
Yeah.
So they're like, we have to address this because it's a threat. So Jasper's going to teach them how to fight, and they decide they're going to ask the Denali clan for help. So Carlyle calls them.
This is so unnecessary.
Yes.
Fuck this, first of all.
So he calls Tanya. He's surprised. He says, oh, we didn't realize Irina felt that way. Edward gleans from hearing this conversation that this is about Laurent and Irina.
Damn Laurent to the deepest pit of hell where he belongs, yeah. is what Edward says.
So Irina's pissed because the wolves killed Laurent to save Bella.
Yeah.
So she wants revenge on the wolves. She wants to kill all the wolves, and they will agree, the Denalis collectively will agree to help the Cullens fight this army if they agree to help kill all the wolves. And Edward and Carlyle are like, no, we're not doing that. Yeah.
Like, oh my God. These poor wolves. They have no idea that this is a thing that she wants. And
yeah, they have no idea that those people even exist.
She has no idea. Yeah, they have no idea that they exist. They have no idea the connection. They also have no idea, like, you know, she could do this without the Cullens.
Oh, yeah, she could attack at
wouldn't,
any point.
Probably.
No,
but
she
like,
wouldn't stand a chance.
She could, which is really interesting context going into Breaking Dawn.
I forgot about this. Irina's beef with the Cullens, like, starts now. And their refusal to align themselves with her over the wolves. And Edward's like, the wolves had every right to kill Laurent. And, like, he's glad that they did that to protect Bella, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way that they would, like, break their treaty to help the Denali, which is interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting that, like, their allegiance doesn't lie that strongly with the Denali.
Right.
Even though they're friends.
It's really, when it comes down to it, not species above all.
Yes.
They really honor this treaty as much as they inappropriately joke about breaking it and killing all of them themselves.
Yeah, like, they
they value their own family in a way that aligns more with this treaty that they've made, I guess. Of course, it doesn't make sense for them to, like, go kill the entire pack. Like, obviously, we've talked a lot about why that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But the Denali are so not clued into that that they think that that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So, essentially, they don't have anyone to help them with this fight. And Jasper's like, we would win this fight, but at what price? Meaning somebody in the Cullens would die.
And I just want to note here, like, Bella's freaking out about that. And yeah. She says, I looked around the room at their faces. Jasper, Alice, Emmett, Rose, Esme, Carlisle, Edward, the faces of my family. Rose.
My best girlfriend, my Rose. Sister-in-law, my sister, Rose. My family, Rose, who I'm so familiar with.
I loved reading this chapter as much as I hated the implications of it.
And there will definitely be more about newborns moving forward.
Yeah.
Just truly an astounding lack of backstory, despite the fact that we just got a whole story about backstory. It's like Jasper's history, really glossed over, really unexplained, absolutely zero human memories that come before enlisting in the army.
And for no good reason, because like, obviously that's the case with Alice, but like, there's an explanation there. Mm-hmm. It's not just like, willfully neglected to be shared by the
Jasper's
person.
Just some guy. We didn't really discuss, but like, Jasper and Alice's relationship, and I know I've said this before, I don't understand it. I want to understand it.
We're just not given enough to understand it.
No, it's just supposed to be like fated in some way. And like, I think that the intersection of their powers is super interesting. Like, I get why that would make them compatible in many ways, but like, I just don't fucking get it. They're weird.
Like, I saw a TikTok recently that was like, do you ever look at a couple and you think, what do you talk about?
Yeah. What is their deal?
Yeah, I don't know.
Someone explain it. I know I've asked to be explained this before, and like, it's probably better coming from somebody who like doesn't strongly ship them. Like, if anyone feels like you don't have to ship them to tell me your answer. Like, if you feel like you understand what they see in each other, please let me know. Hope you enjoyed this. Let us know if you have any thoughts about Jasper or the Confederacy or anything that we shared.
Drop your hot takes on the Confederacy. Yeah.
Looking forward to diving in more with this upcoming graduation party.
And graduation.
Period. Graduation's coming. Well, we'll see you next time. That's all, Forks.
Listening to Gender Forking, a Twilight Saga podcast. All seasons are now streaming anywhere podcasts can be found.
To stay updated about the podcast, follow us on Instagram at genderforking. For more Twilight content from us, follow us at bowlingshirtbellas.tumblr.com.
With questions, comments, and any other inquiries, please email us at bowlingshirtbellas@gmail.com. If you like what